Blog Talk Radio.
Radio, Tuesday, March the 26th, 2024. And our call-in number is 347-857-3293. And our theme tonight, which always is an analysis of oppression, which is always trying to make you understand what the word colonialism means. It's a death camp. And what imperialism means, it means wholesale robbery. And how to understand the American capitalist system. It's a system of economic and political slavery. So tonight we're saying, what's really happening in Haiti? What's really happening in the United States of what they call America? And what's really happening in Gaza? But before we start this program, I cannot thank all of our community on behalf of the Ralph Pointer Lynn Stewart families for the way you represented on Thursday, March 21st, and celebrated his birthday. And I especially want to congratulate all of our comrades and the political organizations that came out to help with this celebration. And some of the people you really should know about, I'm not going to get all of the names, but you know Sister Cheryl Ford, Cheryl White, was one of his goddaughters. And Bob Lederer, Dolores Cox, Don DeBar, Ernesto, his grandson, Stuart, Gil Obler, Jihad Abdul-Mumit, Kathy Chang, and of course, we can't leave out Mike Africa, Ricardo Adams from Rochester, fighting for community control, don't you know? Sarah Adams, his daughter, Mary Adams, the sister who has been at almost every godless demonstration up north, Shauna Glover, and we can't leave out Pam Africa, Sheila Hamanaka, Suzanne Ross, and we definitely have to mention Comrade Serene and the Richard Clemens Trio, and of course the Jeanine Otis St. Mark's Jazz Trio Choir, and Reverend Billy, the Stop Shopping Choir, and it gets even better because we had Mimi Rosenberg, you know that's a homegirl, and of course we had Daoud Komokota in the house, and you know that's a WBAI warrior. It goes on, it gets better. Those of you who came out, to celebrate with us, who we have not seen in so long, Sally O'Brien, I'm sorry I missed you and didn't get a chance to give you a hug. Elspeth, I missed you too, didn't get a chance to give you a hug. And did I say Kathy Chang? I hope I didn't leave her out. There were just so many people who did so much to make this celebration real. You not only came early, but you stayed late. And so we're going to start off a little bit unusual tonight. We're going to open the mic for a comrade. Oh, wait a minute. I didn't mention Professor Louie. I didn't mention Raymond Nat Turner. Oh, my God. Three whips on the hand for me. But let's celebrate someone that you didn't hear. All right, comrade. A fellow warrior for Ralph Pointer. Your mic is open, Brother Kazi.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, sister. And it was a beautiful program. I mean, so spiritually uplifting. You know, his daughter, I mean, she sang. Anyways, Ralph always hoped for change. The struggle for change, he always said, is not a marathon, but a relay race for generations. Of generations. Poem, I wanted to reflect some of that, I hope. I want my immortality back. The earth shudders, another heave and sigh. Those immortal freedom fighters never die. Some say we lost our pointer that gave us direction back to the spirit of the Maroon, Nye Bingie, Poindexter, and Odinga. We all sat in circle and took guidance from Mama Ialua to look deep inside, find our humanity and courage and pick up again where Prosser, Bessie, and Turner immortalized the struggle. Live free or die was the cry. I want my immortality back. The earth uttered, the Sankofa bird echoed, a reminder like when in our youth we bared our chests and ran into the fray. Sekou, Matulu, Russell, Ialua, Poindexter, and Pointer. Those immortal freedom fighters never die. Beyond Brooklyn, beyond the U.S. and Africa, beyond the planet and the universe itself, every cell in our body is linked to an ancestral stream of energy that never dies. And if you dare to struggle, you will be immortalized. No fear, Gear. Stiff fist salute. I want my immortality back. Salute to Ralph. Salute to Ralph. Bubba Ralph.
Oh, wow. Let's keep going. I want to mention somebody else that was there and turned the house out. I think I mentioned the Stop Shopping Choir with Reverend Billy, but I don't know if I've mentioned Professor Louie. I don't know if I mentioned Suzanne Ross. And I know I didn't mention Chairman Omali Yeshitela and our dear sister Lisa was co-chair with Mike Africa. I didn't mention the big pitch to get over the extra $1,000 for Mamiya and Peltier that was done by Sister Pam Africa, and I certainly don't want to leave out the audience, the peoples who came and celebrated and stayed, and the spirit was in the house. His spirit pulled us all in and kept us there, not bickering, not contesting my political philosophy versus your political philosophy, but just celebrating who he was, even though it was painful and we missed him, but he was there. And I thank everybody. And we're going to keep this going because Professor Louis is here tonight. And Professor Louis, fantastic program, fantastic. Your mic is open. And thank you, Brother Kazi. That was just what my spirit needed.
Come in, brother. Make yourself welcome. Don't wander these cold streets alone. Sit down at the table. You might not have money. You might not have a job. You might not have a girlfriend. But come in, brother. Sit down at the table. Don't you have two arms, two legs, a mouth that needs to be fed, two eyes, two ears, a mouth that needs to talk to someone? Tell us your story. Sit down at the table and take it easy on yourself. The word is out. It's not all your fault. You got no money because there is no money for you. You got no job because there is no job for you. You will never be one of those smiling, happy, successful faces on TV. Those people are all actors anyway. Don't worry if the boss don't like you. The boss makes money by not liking you. Don't worry if the cops don't like you. The cops get paid not to like you. So take it easy on yourself. Sit down at the table. We know you don't trust nobody. How could it be different when you don't trust yourself? We know you don't like nobody. How could it be different when you don't like yourself? We know you don't give a damn about nobody. How could it be different when you don't give a damn about your own self? But come in, brother. Sit down at the table. We know how bad you feel, just like all the rest of us, broke in 100 pieces that will not come together. How could it be different? The school says, be a good boy or else you're sunk. The fellas in the schoolyard say, be a bad boy, else you're a punk. The church says, be nice, don't bother the girls. The movies say the man with a big macho gets everything in the world. The boss says, come early and always do your work. The other workers say, slow down, man, don't act like a jerk. The cops say, this is the law. Go to jail if you don't obey. The judge says, if you got the money, you could just walk away. The medical books say, if you use drugs, you will soon be through. But everyone says, if you don't taste a little, something's the matter with you. Jesus says, don't be violent and turn the other cheek. The heroes on TV kill 9 guys a week. So many lies that have gone on for so long. Being crazy is the same thing as not knowing right from wrong. So come in, brother. You will never solve the puzzle by yourself. Sit down at the table and be cool when you cross the doorway. We know you are mad. Bring your madness to the right place. If you have to steal some money, rob the bank. That's where the money is. If you have to steal some food, rob the supermarket. That's where the food is. If you have to break someone's head, break the president's. That's who is breaking your head. But be cool, please, when you step in here. It is written on the door, he who rips off his family shall have no family. So come in and act right. Sit down at the table. We know you had problems with your daddy. We all had problems with our daddy. Hey, your daddy had his own problems. We know you had problems with your mama. We all had problems with our mama. Hey, your mama had her own problems. We know you had problems with the women. We all had problems with the women. Hey, the women got their own goddamn problems. So come in, brother. Sit down at the table. Don't let yourself wander these hard streets. Don't sit alone and watch TV. Don't drink in bars with strangers where the only warmth between you comes from the glasses on the counter. Don't waste time and money on expensive toys, super-duper smartphones, super-sharp video games, super-slick TVs. All the programs are bullshit anyways. Don't, please don't, stick a needle in your arm full of sick white poison, taking out your own heart's blood and desire, leaving only a warm blanket to crawl under with no desire left except for more sick white poison to stick in your other arm. Don't roam these neon sidewalks like a wild animal searching for someone to get over on. Don't cut yourself off tough, cold, hard, and so completely lost, standing on the corner, 100 different ways to go, and no street leading home, 100 different masks to hide behind, and never knowing which face is really yours. Please stop dreaming of that one big get over that will make everyone love you, that one big dope deal, or hit the lottery for $500 million showing up in your old neighborhood with a red Mercedes and $5,000 leather pants. The last thing you need is friends who like you because you got money. So come in, brother. Just don't beat us for anything. Family is those who act like family. Sit down at the table. You may be strung out, stretched out, tripped out, doped out, spaced out, psyched out, far out, failed out, flunked out, dropped out, passed out, laid out, fallen out, crashed out, knocked out, locked out, phased out, dumped out, pumped out, jumped out, put out, cursed out, bailed out, burnt out, worn out. No matter how worn out, we walk under the same sky. We sweat under the same dollar. Family is those who act like family. Come in, man. Sit down at the table.
Wow. Anybody who was there Thursday, you know why he said that poem tonight. Family is those who act like family. And boy, I wish, well, I know he heard his granddaughter, because she joined the political family that night. Her voice was the voice of radical political angels screaming out for freedom and love. Thank you, Professor Louis. Family of those who act like family. I want to say I read a lot of so-called slave narratives of the women in our history who were captives during slavery. And one of the things they all talked about was that long, dull pain. And I didn't know what it meant until he left. And yes, it's a long, dull pain. But I have to tell you, the solidarity of the comrades who came out on Thursday, you really helped heal some of that long, dull pain. And I am deeply in your debt. And I hope I didn't leave out Charles Barron. He was there. You know he let it hang out. And to all of you who are listening, Don DeBar, Ernesto, and Abir, along with Jacob Schmidt, who was the tech from Riverside Church, are working on a video recording that will be available. However, I think you can still access the program online. In addition to that, we want to thank everybody. We met our mark and then some in terms of raising funds for the political prisoners. We went over the $4,000 mark, and the last time I checked, things were still coming in. Without further ado, I want to say something else about Professor Louis' poem. When you hear him talk about come in, brother, and you see what the right wing, the narrative they're trying to push, they're trying to push the same narrative on the New York City subway system that they are trying to push on Haiti. Our young people are not animals. Our young people are not beasts. Our young peoples are the victims of capitalism. And until you have a revolution and free them so that they will know who their enemies are, this is what is going to happen. And you can count on the ravenous beast that is the ruling class to exploit their anger, to exploit their pain, and use it to lock us all up. If you understood what is making people act out and hurt each other, then how does it help to have cops in the subway stopping people from jumping turnstiles who can't afford to pay the goddamn subway fare to get to work? How does that help? And so when you listen to Professor Louis' program, and when you listen to Professor Louis' poem, and when you listen to everybody that's here on this call tonight, you understand why you must do something. And if you were there Thursday night, you know groups were talking to each other, planning and getting ready to push back. And so I thank all of you who came. I cannot thank you enough. It was healing to see you all there. We want to keep the momentum rolling. We want to keep it going on. So we want to go to one of our brothers who has paid dues, but who understands that we all must do a little bit of something, something. So I hope I got this right. Brother Henry, your mic is open.
Thank you, Sister Betty, and my apologies for being unable to attend that melodious affair. Things came up, and I was there in spirit. I want to share with you an excerpt of an editorial from Workers World of April 18, 2019. And the title of the article itself is A Much Abused Word. The word democracy gets thrown around a lot in this country. Most of the time it's used to prettify a political system that pretends to carry out the wishes of the majority of the people through elections, while in fact the system serves the interests of capital, the big banks and insurance companies, the corporate polluters of the earth and exploiters of labor. A billionaire bigoted realtors like the current one, talking about Trump, he was elected democratically, wasn't he? In fact, he is a living example of how big money buys political office in a capitalist democracy. These super rich have the unrestricted ability in this democracy to buy politicians and votes. They set aside funds to get their stooges or themselves elected, just as they set aside an advertising budget. While there have recently been a few notable exceptions, big money still gets its way in the vast majority of elections. And then there's the Democratic Party. For decades, the liberals in this party showed what they meant by democracy with annual dinners extolling Thomas Jefferson and Andrew Jackson. Rarely mentioned, of course, not even as a footnote to all of the praise, was the fact that both were big slave owners and Jackson a murderer of Native people, and that the Southern states so solidly in the Democratic Party camp while these dinners were taking place found segregation compatible with being Democratic. Democracy, in the view of those early Democrats, Jefferson and Jackson, was completely compatible with slavery, with treating human beings as property to be brought, worked nearly to death, and sold downriver, where the enslaved people might never see their spouses, their children, or their friends. Chattel slavery was finally defeated. Many who fought against it in the Civil War, black and white, did so for reasons of principle and humanity. But for big capital in the North, the main factor was not a yearning for democracy. It was that chattel slavery was a less productive, less profitable mode of production than the system which replaced it, wage slavery. And I'll leave it there because it's extensive, and I will save part two perhaps for next week.
That was awesome. Thank you. For those of you who are listening and didn't make it Thursday, I want you to know you also missed some excellent food. Nick Swain, a Riverside caterer, knocked it out of the ballpark. And Jimmy Del Bella, who was very instrumental in arranging for us to receive some empanadas from his chef, his friend who is a chef, Giacomo, knocked it out of the ballpark. In addition to that, our comrade Dolores Cox networked with Just Soul Caterers. These sisters knocked out some patties that were off the chart. Spinach patties, chicken patties, and beef patties. Absolutely wonderful. So we didn't just give you poetry. We didn't just give you money. I mean music. We also fed you very well. And some people are talking about let's do it again next year. Without further ado, I want to keep my mantra going. How does it help when the working class is at the bottom and trying to get to work, to lock them up for jumping the turnstile when you don't make the rich pay their fair share of taxes. Come on now, leftists. We got to do something about this. This is absurd. Without further ado, one of our guests who is here tonight is a brother that we heard last week. I want to give him an opportunity to give us a little bit more of his wisdom because he represents a different generation. Brother Comrade Shaquille, thank you for coming back. Your mic is open. And Joel, get ready.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, loud and clear.
Thank you. I appreciate you so much, Sister Betty, and I appreciate you for sharing the video of the event. I actually had my robotics class last Thursday, unfortunately, but you know, I'm happy I got to at least see, you know, parts of it on video. I think to your point that you were outlining, like, it all ties together. What we're seeing in the subway system, as you said, I think it's been a part of a longer push that's been going back decades, right? We talk about this capitalist system and this modern iteration, which is, you know, this neoliberal order, which wants to privatize everything to expropriate the working class and the poor people all over the world, and to, you know, relegate them to certain areas, to police them, to survey them, you know. And we're seeing that, as you mentioned, in our subways. We're seeing the same thing in Haiti. And the barbaric images that have been, racist images that have been shared all over popular media, which is far less, you know, far less regulated than, you know, even the mainstream, which themselves have issues in their reporting. I think it has been, you know, a part of a bigger thing. We saw an interview with the head of Blackwater talking about, if these nations can't govern themselves, we need to go back in and colonize them again. A man that was locked up for his barbarity and criminality over in the Middle East, you know, and let back out, and it's like, you know, he doesn't change. And I think this is really the face of a lot of this Western neoliberal colonial imperialist system, you know. And I think that we even see it in this recent, like, push against affirmative action, which has also been decades long. I mean, it also goes back to this image, how quickly, you know, the people who have been subjugated in this country for hundreds of years, under the people who have spent almost the entirety of this nation's history bombing, immiserating, and expropriating the wealth of the global South and you know, the peoples of the world, all of a sudden they've turned history on its head, and they've turned the people who have suffered into the violent criminal element when there's no historical basis for that. I think this is a part of the bigger picture. They, like, every time there is a push for more democratic and, as you said, community control, democratic rule, and a democratic system of justice within our society, we see a retrenchment. This isn't anything new. If we study history, we should expect this. We saw people all over the world come out for one of the biggest, if not the biggest, popular movements, especially in recent history. And we see how they responded with the cop cities all over. And cop city in Atlanta is not the only one. There's already cop cities all over. You know, and they built cop cities even in the 1800s when, you know, you had, her name is escaping me right now, but the black anarchist woman who participated in a popular militant workers movement. We saw the Haymarket riots and how that was the basis for the establishment of these, the armories that we even have to this day, the NYPDs and LAPDs. And, like, this structure was created to suppress popular working class democratic movements. And I mean, even if we want to go back even further, people talk about the military industrial complex quickly, and, you know, people think it's a recent thing, but George Washington himself set up the military industrial complex, right? They put tariffs on imports of weapons and set up the industry so that they could have the ability to expropriate the land of the people who are already here and to immiserate them and to wipe them out. So I think, you know, we're in the midst of a long history, but there are a lot of, like, things to be mindful of and also be prepared for and excited about. That's it. Thank you.
Well, I thank you. For those of you who are listening, this is the next generation speaking. This is why when I have these long nights and I miss my warrior, I go to sleep finally thinking about the next generation that's going to come right behind us and give them hell. Brother Shaquille, thank you so much. And we've got a long list of people, so I'm going to ask that when you give your analysis, you be aware of time. Brother Joel, your mic is open, and Sister Ann has an incredible report, and we can't wait. Oh, my goodness. It looks like something happened with Brother Joel's link. So we're going to go straight to Sister Ann and Brother Joel. When we see you back in the queue, we'll open up your mic. And I think Brother Gill is also in the house.
Fantastic.
Sister Ann, your mic is open. I understand the New York City Jericho comrade has some interesting news for us.
Yes, we do have some very positive news. By the way, I wanted to thank Shaquille. That was very good. And apparently there are about 80 of those cop cities already in the United States. They call them fusion centers. Anyway, we have good news about our dear comrade and brother, Kevin Rashid Johnson. As people may know, he's been on a hunger strike or was on a hunger strike starting in December. He got bopped around by the state. He was moved here and there. He was in dire medical conditions. Luckily, there were some legal folk who also jumped on, in addition to all of us making calls and writing letters and sending emails. So the fact that we have done that has gotten Rashid transferred to the eastern part of Virginia, where he is closer to medical facilities, as we have all been demanding. So he is now at Greensville Correctional Center, and that's 901 Corrections Way, Jarrett, Virginia, 23870. So this is up on jerichony.org on the prisoners page and also at the jerichomovement.com on the prisoners page. He is classified as a politicized prisoner. So he has been, finally was able to communicate. So he reports that he's in much better health. We're glad to hear. He had lost a lot of weight during the hunger strike. He was really almost at death's door. But he's already gained back much of it. He has had his tablet restored, so that way he can be communicating with people. So he's somewhat able to communicate by email. Phone communication seemed to be in the process of being restored. He is not in solitary confinement, as he was at Red Onion State Prison. This report is incomplete, as communications remain somewhat spotty. So this was from our dear friend, Carol Seligman, who's been doing work for our political prisoners for many, many years. And many of them know her very well. So this is very, very excellent news. I do have to report a negative side is that they still have not restored his name or his number to the online inmate lookup. So that is like in a way of saying, like, we're trying to sort of disappear this guy. You know, he's sort of a thorn in our sides, which he is. He just wrote another excellent piece, which I will be sending out by email in a few minutes. And people should go to his website. It's called rashidmod.com. If you don't know Rashid, you can read some of his writings. He has an excellent book out as well called Defying the Tomb, which is fantastic. And he is also an amazing artist. And we have used his artwork on T-shirts. We've used it in publications, all of which he encourages us to do. So if you don't know Rashid, take the time. Go to rashidmod.com. Check him out. If they haven't posted his current address, as I say, it's on jerichony.org and the jerichomovement.com. So while we're celebrating the fact that we have positive news about Rashid, which we're very happy to have, remember, go to jerichony.org, make those phone calls and emails for Mumia, and make those phone calls and emails for Leonard. You know, at this beautiful event for Ralph's birthday that Sister Betty has been talking about, this was a fundraiser for Mumia and Leonard Peltier. So we're very happy about that, and we thank you, Sister Betty, and we thank Ralph, because we know that's what he would have wanted us to do. And so, you know, in addition to that, we need to keep the heat on for those two brothers as well. So as you can see, making phone calls and writing letters and sending emails does make a difference. So let's keep it up, and let's get the medical care that's needed for Leonard and the medical care that's needed for Momia while we are in the process of bringing them home, because that is our goal. We want to bring them home. We are tired of them being in these death camps. So that's all I have to say. What's the call? Free them all.
Free them. I want you to know that Sister Ann stays on top of the political issue, but she's about liberation struggle. You've got to go to the Jericho website. You've got to Google New York City Jericho and read her articles. She's really running a political political prisoner seminar online. That's what it boils down to. You've got to do what Brother said. He told you time and time again. Sister Ann, we hope we can come back to you. But I want to paraphrase a statement by Noel Hanrahan. She says, when we fight, we win. So we must keep fighting. And I want you to remember what Brother Shakil said. I can't believe this. He had the nerve to say, it's time we did it to him again. What exactly did he say, Shakil? This colonial genocidist. Are you there? Okay, we'll come back to him. Brother Joel, I see you're still connected. Are you ready?
Yes. Yes,
you.
I apparently pressed the wrong button there on the phone. And anyway, I've been... I have to apologize that I didn't make it to the commemoration, and I think it was one of the it's a commemoration to one of the most important people in this entire century. I think Ralph never got the credit, especially the public credit, the amazing guidance that he has given to the entire movement, every phase of it, especially combining the labor and black liberation, and then really refocusing the movement on our political prisoners, our fighting veterans, many of whom are still suffering in these rotten prison conditions in the death camps. And we have to remember that what we owe to these people to keep up the activity, to keep up the analysis and the educational and organizational work that can bring together the force to overthrow this entire system of exploitation around the world, and especially as people who live in the United States, who were actually part of the one of the initial settler colonial models of the entire country. And settler colonial means that the entire population, during all the genocide now that's been called out as such due to the extreme brutality and genocidal determination of the Zionist state or entity that's been right before our eyes committing genocide. You know, even when the genocide was being committed in Nazi Germany, it was all done in secret. It wasn't boasted about in public. This was not on the radio what was going on in the death camps and the roundups and everything else. With the current situation, it's right there on TV for all to see, and It's totally, totally shameless and unbounded. And the reason why is that they make the distinction between, well, you're not supposed to be making a war. It's supposed to be aimed against the committed military forces and not on the civilians. And here you've got a war on nothing really but civilians. There's no Gaza army or anything, and there's no tanks, no planes on the other side, it's just shooting people, really defenseless people down. And the reason but on the other side, when they talk about October 7th, they say, oh, this is terrible. It was an attack on civilians and everything. But these civilians are settler colonials who are waging the oppression directly against the people. Everyone there is sort of a soldier growing up as a settler colonial with all of these privileges, living on stolen land and everything else, and working in war with imperialism, not just from 1967, we're not just talking about the initial imprisonment of the Palestinian people under settler colonialism, but even the 1956 war, when they teamed up with the British and the French against Egypt, because the Egyptians during the Nasser period wanted to nationalize and did nationalize the Suez Canal, and they wanted to help the British and the French take it back. So the imperialist character of that area, it was starkly exposed many, many times, again and again. And we have to remember that this country, the United States, is really the model for that in terms of the treatment of the native peoples that lived here. The ongoing lifelong imprisonment of the tribal structures that are still that people are living in lifelong death camps. A lifespan about approximately half of the lifespan of the so-called average American, who are in advanced generations of steady settler colonialism, meaning that we're living on the stolen land. We're benefiting from all of this genocide that was done. The whites are benefiting or feel themselves benefiting from centuries of racial slavery at different levels. In addition to world imperialism, robbing the rest of the world to maintain a differential in the standard of living, which is then felt as a privilege, and only now is beginning to be questioned and challenged. I would say really beginning with the Vietnam War, which was an extension of that entire thing. And throughout this entire period, I just want to point out the outstanding work that was done day after day, year after year, by Ralph and Lynn, Betty, and all the other comrades who have dedicated their lives to, as one of the brightest stars in the sky, when you really measure the brightness, which is not publicly done often enough. And So I want to say that we have to rededicate ourselves in this period when now we see that the police state, the situation in the subways has been mentioned before, but how much starker could it be when they're not only bringing the police on the subways, but the National Guard, which is somewhere between the police and the military. And after 9/11, we could remember that we had the military actually came into the city, and they were concentrated in largely in the tunnels of the subway, very similar to where the Gaza people had prepared for their survival, knowing that major attack was coming and dug all of these tunnels that are talked about in such a derogatory and opposite way. These were a defensive system that would enable a population to fight back and survive when they didn't have anywhere near the kinds of military weapons that the settler colonial Zionist entity is now bringing to bear every day, and again, boastfully on TV, so there's no doubt. You know, when they talk about something and they want to build a center more and more to militarize and nationally centralize the police. And this whole thing, when you think of Cop City, that translates almost directly from English to English into police state, Cop City, police state. And that's pretty much the perspective that the ruling class has laid out. But it also makes it all the more urgent to come together and struggle to make sure that they don't consolidate that and that it can be reversed, and that we get together with the rest of the world that's fighting against U.S. imperialism in all of its forms, and make sure that we develop a global system which is based on human needs.
I'm going to have to go, but we thank you so much for that. If we have time, we'll come back to you. But we really thank you for that analysis. And what you need to put into perspective as Joel is speaking is that New York City has one of the largest houseless, homeless populations in the United States of America. So here they are. They're blaming the working class for not being able to afford the train fare to get to work. And they're attacking the homeless people by not preparing them to move into homes, not shelters, but homes. And many of these children that they accuse of being bandits are merely that. They are the throwaway class that capitalism needs. Thank you. Thank you, Joel. We need to move right along. And as I said before, I believe Gil is in the house. And Brother Sierra, please get ready. And Brother Shackley will definitely come back to you, because one of the things you said is still reverberating in my head. Brother Gil, thank you so much for the incredible job that you have done to make the Ralph Pointer Memorial a reality. And some of the speakers that I did not mention, one of them was Nellie Bailey. She was in the house. And the reason the event was important is because it reaffirmed the solidarity of the people who know that the only answer is to colonialism is the liberation struggle. But the Gil, your mic is open.
Yeah, I just want to add, you know, obviously you mentioned Ann Lamb, but Ann Lamb and Deborah Rosario and Devlin Edwards were there at 3 o'clock and there until the end. Ann spent most of the time at the table registering everyone coming in. Deborah and Devlin helped serve the food, which was a critical piece. So I just want to mention their names. In coming weeks, I hope to talk about what public transportation really means free, and not not what, you know, whether people are getting in one way or the other. We had free public transportation in this country in the 1970s in Portland, Oregon, and we're moving backwards. We're talking about a congestion tax instead of paying for free public transportation. It's gonna get used just like everything else to subsidize the commuter rails coming into the city and not the public transportation in the center. I also will talk about the genocide. The genocide is not just in Gaza. 500 million or a half a billion people were killed from 1492 to 1945. But another half billion children have been killed, according to the World Health Organization, since 1945. So the genocide is accelerating. The resource theft is accelerating. Reparations is not just about slavery or the early colonial period. It's about what we call the neocolonial or Pax Americana period as well. I'll also be talking about how the OSS and Nazi intelligence was merged in 1946 to create what we call the CIA. But right now we got to talk about Mumia, so we'll talk about those things in coming weeks. April 24th, his birthday. It's a Wednesday in about 4 weeks. There are going to be at least two events in Philadelphia. The people of France, especially in Saint-Denis, they've got a petition that they're delivering to the DA and to the governors in Central City. So there's going to be action in near City Hall in the afternoon. There's likely to be a rally and march around that as well. The times are still being determined. In addition, a program's been planned for a couple months now in the evening. It's focused in the evening because we're trying to get young people involved, as we talked about earlier in this program. So we had planned on a bus down there, but because the evening event is likely to be in Germantown or another part of town than Center City, we're not sure anymore if we're going to use a bus and some vans or just get some vans. We're looking for drivers. Two of the four drivers we usually use are available to are probably not. So we're in the coming days, we're going to be starting to promote on freemumia.com and ralphpointer.org the events in Philly. We need people to sign up and indicate. Do they want to just come to the afternoon event? Do they want to come to both events? Do they want to just come to the evening event? And based on that, we'll figure out the transportation plan for folks to get down there, through the organizing in New York. I wish I had, more explicit information, and we really need your help. We don't just need to know you're coming. We need to know when you need, what time you're available, to go down there, what time you need to come back. Because we do understand that folks, have to work Thursday. They're already maybe taking one day off of work. We don't want to ask them to take 2 days off of work because they get back to New York, after 11. And we all know the subways stop working. As soon as you're not taking people to or from work, they stop really providing what they call public transportation. Thank you.
I thank you for pulling my coattails about my comrades who stood. Sister Devlin, you will know her because she's always working at anything that involves Mumia. She is unstoppable and she is devoted. So thank you, Brother Gellin. We look forward to more of your comments. We're going to move right along.
No, just so you know, though, Devlin is one of the two people that will be driving a van that day. So,
all right.
In addition to, yeah.
All right. Okay, thank you so much. Brother Sieto, thank you for waiting. Your mic is open, and I do believe I see Sister Lisa in the house. Hopefully we'll have an update on Haiti. I mean, Haiti's getting the same bum rap that our underclass is getting in the subways. And people, for all intents and purposes, you're living in a police state in New York City. It's not just Cop City. Cop City has taken us over. All right, so it's your time to step up to the mic. And if you step up and protest, I can guarantee you there will be support for you based on what the spirit I felt and saw Thursday night at the memorial for Ralph Pointer. But without further ado, thank you, Brother Dennis, for waiting. And I believe Comrade Sister Lisa is in the house, one of our MCs for the event that kept the program going and kept it excited. So, Brother Comrade Sayeto, thank you for waiting. Your mic is open.
Very exciting memorial birthday for Comrade Ralph on last Thursday. Very all of the revolutionaries in the house brought the house down with memories. I want to give a lot of props to the son of Ralph Point as well, the Sisters Africa. Of course, Chairman Omalia Santella, and of course, Charles Barron. And I can go on and on and on. Brother Jaheed, I was just amazed and stuck to my seat for the 5 hours of presentation. Just to let you know, I was looking at it on Zoom. Now I want to move on, and Brother Louis, I tell you, there ain't nobody like Louis now. Nobody like Louis. I want to make this announcement first and then go real quick to Hayden, real quick. Join us this Saturday, Hands Off Uhuru webinar, the case of the Uhuru 3 All Out for the Trial, Saturday, March 30th at 3 p.m., 2 p.m. on Eastern Standard Time and 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, 12 p.m. Pacific Time. The federal government is moving forward, as we all know. A trial date is set for September the 3rd in Tampa, Florida. You'll hear from the Uhuru 3, our legal team, and updates from the Julian Assange Committee and more. That's what this webinar is all about, which will be, again, this Saturday, the 30th. No, I mean the 30th. It's not this Saturday. Well, it is this Saturday. Let's fight back against this test case attempting to silence the anti-colonial free speech movement, trying to take freedoms. The whole attempt is to take the freedom, steal the land, take the freedom. Register at handsoffuhuru.org/register. I wanted to get that out. Hopefully everybody got that. Register at handsoffuhuru.org/register. Now we get on to Haiti. You know, this weaponry that Haiti has. Now listen to Comrade Daoud download his broadcast, and he's very powerful, the brother who is Haitian, living in New York, whom you mentioned quite a few times to listen to that program. This weaponry is not made in Haiti. Haitians in Haiti couldn't afford to even pay for the weapons in Haiti, right? And then to show us online or on the video that they show, speaking of the mainstream media, how bodies are strewn in the street, how the mayhem and chaos, which is manufactured, by the way, by the United States government, a country with no firearms or ammunition has no manufacturing capabilities, right? We've seen this with the CIA. We've seen them put weapons in the alleys so that we could kill each other in Chicago, New York, California. You can go on and on and on. It's historic, the things that they would do and the tricks and traps they would use to dupe you and me to believe that it's me and you. We don't have the money. The weapon that was used, one of the weapons that was used, was thousands of dollars. It was an AR, but it was a very well-manufactured AR-15 that's used in the military, United States military. Used to be called the M16. You all remember that? Likely to have originated tax firearm laws and many trafficked into Haiti from Florida, they say. United States government have been interested in Haiti
for decades prior to its occupation as a potential naval base for the United States and other imperialist powers. Haiti's stability was of great interest to the United States diplomatic and defense officials, who feared instability might result in foreign rule of Haiti. Now, mind you, August 21st, 1791 to January 1st, 1804, for 12 years, 4 months, 1 week, and 4 days, the revolution was fought by Haiti and France. This is really what we all know that they're upset about, because what? Haitians won. Our African Haitians won that Revolutionary War in Haiti. And so they never let us forget. They want the resources. Coming here, because I know I've said enough, Haiti's crisis this time can be traced directly to Moise's assassination. But the roots go much deeper to the economic catastrophe caused by the 2010 earthquake. We all remember that. How they went over, raped, took the advantage, said we're going over to feed the hungry. It's always the use that these government agencies use to go rape and pillage and take land. The 29-year dictatorial rule of Papa Doc and Baby Doc Duvalier, and even to the grotesque impact of the vast reparations, Haiti was forced to pay reparations to France. I'm going to end it right there. We all know the rule. The rule is kill, steal, and destroy. That's the American way. The rule is to take everything from those, divest them of any agency, and then to totally embarrass them, and then to demean them as if we're inhuman. Uhuru.
Uhuru, uhuru, uhuru. We're going to keep this going, and I believe I see Comrade Lisa in the house. She has a report on colonialism that you must hear. You have got to hear this program. I want to go back to Shaq again, because this kind of arrogance should be answered. Anytime they talk to you like this, if I understood what Brother Shaq said, Brother Shaquille said, it means that they no longer fear us. Brother Daoud, I don't know which organization you want me to cite, but I want everybody to know on Saturdays, and you can give them the time. I think it's either 4 to 6 or 5 to 7 on WBAI. You can hear the real news. WBAI will set you straight, and we've got Daoud helping to do it. Your mic is open. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you very much for Sister Betty. And I want to thank everyone on the line. It was really a beautiful event. Thursday for Ralph's 90th birthday, and I definitely want to put in my vote to encourage that this will be an annual event to honor Ralph and to support the political prisoners. Beautiful, beautiful event. I learned a lot at the event, and thank you, Sister Betty, for the opportunity to share about Haiti. The program Haiti, Our Revolution Continues is Saturday, is on the AI 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. And I really want to thank my brother who just spoke. Definitely, you know, this is what's going on in Haiti right now. And we want family to understand. We call it theater, a macabre sort of theater, because Haitians, really poor Haitians, are being killed by these gangs. They're being terrorized, and it's, of course, gangs armed and financed by the United States and their lackeys in Haiti. And at the event, what we said is that practically all of these things you're hearing about Haiti, it's a joke, it's not true, but they're making it come true in terms of the number of people who are killed and the number of people who would be hungry, you know, and to make it like the only thing we can do is to come to them who are responsible for the problem to beg for them to help us. And as I said, you know, that's not going to happen. We also want to let you guys know when you see, like last, I think it was Wednesday, Al Sharpton, Eric Adams, and these, some of them were Haitian-Americans and some African-American pastors and other, you know, misleaders of our people who come, and the message they gave at City Hall in New York City was for Joe Biden to do something for the Republicans in the Congress to release the money for Haiti. This is not money for Haiti. This is what we want folks to understand. This is money for the U.S. to pay Kenya, pay Haiti on behalf of the United States. Blackface.
Repeat
blackface,
please. For somebody who is brainwashed, they don't understand how colonialism works. Please repeat that.
And some people, you know, they're like, yeah, you know, the Reverend Al was at City Hall talking, defending Haiti. The clown was not defending Haiti here. The clown was pushing the envelope for the Democratic Party. And we have to say it for what it is, exactly that. And so my brother just said, you know, for decades, the United States has been doing this in Haiti. The United States has been doing this since before Haiti became an independent country in 1804. You know, in the 1890s, they brought Frederick Douglass. You know, Frederick Douglass as an ambassador to Haiti for what? To try to do the same thing, to get Haitian the a part of North Saint-Nicolas across from Guantanamo Bay to control entry to the Caribbean Sea for the United States. And Frederick Douglass, when he understood what they had brought him there to do, I think Harrison was the president, he said, no, I'm not gonna do this. And, you know, the praise that Haiti has gotten from Frederick Douglass to explain it to black people in general over here, you know, that folks should read up on that, should understand what Frederick Douglass felt that Haiti represents to black people and to the world. And also this thing about CARICOM countries trying to help the Haitians get our act together, garbage again, you know. These CARICOM countries are playing, you know, lackey for the United States to get the U.S. project implemented, a new constitution in Haiti that makes it easier for their puppet presidents to give away the resources of Haiti. And they want an election to have another puppet to, you know, to do their bidding. So, Joe Biden has been doing something in Haiti. He has been sending these guns. He has been sending these weapons. And, of course, U.S. Military has been in Haiti. They are already there. It's not a question of them coming. So thank you, Sister Betty. Thank you to the family. And please, guys, support these programs and BAI, because, you know, if you don't, then because BAI now is keeping tabs on how much each program brings in. So we cannot lose what's happening, Sister Betty's program over there. It's what keeps the voice of political prisoners alive. And it's very important to do that. And everyone on BAI is not a friend. Who seems to be a friend of Haiti is not necessarily a friend of Haiti. But we know that we do have some, and we do appreciate that folks listen and that the folks support. Thank you, Sister Betty, for the time to speak, and thank you, everyone.
No, it's about solidarity, because they're running on you. They're running on us. Brother Shaquille, I want you to repeat that part, what this imperialist said. It's time to do it to them again. put that phrase out there again. You know what I'm referring to before we go to Sister Lisa? Can you find that statement?
So when I was saying how the head of Blackwater was saying that, you know, these nations.
Blackwater, for people who have been sleeping for the last 100 years, tell them who Blackwater is.
So Blackwater is a private paramilitary group, you know, and often the imperialists use these private corporations to distance themselves from the, you know, the consequences or the flak from their actions. We saw this even going back to the Dutch East India Company and the British East India Company, right? So we see him going on live TV after being, you know, his people being exonerated from their war crimes in Iraq, right? He goes on and says, look, these countries can't govern themselves, and particularly talking about Africa and the likes of Haiti, they can't govern themselves. We need to go back in and recolonize them. But I think what the brother just said, you know, there's two dominant trends. We talk about colonialism, we have to talk about neocolonialism. Because, yes, they want to do this, but they are afraid. That's why they have to send Kenya. That's why they have to go all over the world and look for different groups to put a black face or another face on it. Because when the people are too politically astute, they know they can't come in their raw form. They have to, you know, come in new songs and dances. So there's two things going on at once. Yes, they want to do it again, and also the people are watching.
Right on. Thank you so much. Please understand, Brother Joel is telling you, Brother Daoud is telling you, Comrade Shaquille is telling you, Comrade Gill is telling you, Comrade Sierra is telling you, Comrade Henry is telling you, Comrade Ann is telling you. So, folks, when we fight, we win. But you can't fight if you don't know what to fight for. I want to show you how pernicious colonialism and fascism is. Sister Lisa, thank you so much for the incredible job you did with your partner, Mike Africa Jr., on Thursday on behalf of the program for Ralph Poynter Jr. You had a really tough job. There were so many wonderful speakers and so little time. Thank you for returning tonight. I don't know how you do it. You're in the streets all day acting up and creating struggle, and then here you are to give us a report this evening. Thank you.
Well, I just want to first of all say, Sister Betty, thank you so much. That was your vision, and it was just a pleasure working with everyone, you know, work behind the scenes to put that together, and I just thank everybody. There were no egos. People just came and did the work, and it was just a beautiful event. So I just have to say that. And of course, the life and the vision and the spirit of our revolutionary brother, Ralph Poynter. And I just want to say this real quickly before I get into this report, is that many times, many of us don't have any idea in terms of how this is all going to happen or what's going to happen. And we think many times we have to have those answers first. But no, show up. Get involved. Be around people and find the people and the legacies that you want to model yourself after. Just saying, I wish I could be like that person can go a long way, because that's what I've been doing my whole life. And I really want to bring this up because, you know, as you know, we're working on also getting the website live and active about Ralph and his tremendous legacy. And so that it can be a living document within our lives, so we can understand this tremendous history that preceded many of us in my generation and the generations coming up. And so we can also know about the work that was done so that we can have any kind of thing that we have today if we are black and indigenous, and we're black, brown, and indigenous, and especially in the United States. But one of the things that is going on, because as we know, there are so many different genocides going on every day, and one of the ones that we are currently witnessing in real time is what is happening in Palestine. And we've been having people rising up and vigils and everything, organizing to try to stop this barbarity, you know, what the United States is very much involved in. And so in the suburbs, where I happen to live, in the suburbs in New Jersey, there's been a lot of activism going on, and we've been having these weekly vigils and everything. And during the month of Ramadan, because as we know, Israel is how I say the name, it has just been barbaric and savage and doesn't even show them anything during the month of Ramadan, and that has just become another opportunity for them to find just other ways of committing genocide against the people of Palestine. And so one of the people, I think, affiliated with the school system in South Orange, Maplewood, had sent around, a memo talking about Ramadan. And this is a person of, at least a Muslim, I believe, of Palestinian descent, but from that region. And they sent around, Ramadan terms and how to deal with this issue. And they talk about what is going on in Palestine. And basically, as you know, if you tell the truth, they're going to come after you, because the Department of Education is now investigating the township of the Maplewood South Orange School District. And one of the things that they highlight is that on this one flyer that was sent around, it basically accuses the United States of conspiring with Israel to commit a genocide in Gaza, which is what it's doing. For some reason, my computer is acting up. I wanted to show you exactly what it said. But basically, that's the gist of what was said. And they don't want people. They want to control, what we say to our children, how we educate them, as you yourself know, Sister Betty. And this is just a continuation of the struggles that Ralph Poynter, that you and Ralph Poynter fought. And I don't think many of us are as aware of what happened during the 60s, during that time, as we should be. But that just gave such strength and inspiration to me, and to be able to relay to some of the people that, I've been going to this vigil with and attending, to say, no, we know this fight has to continue. But yes, they are coming after the school system and accusing New Jersey's been atrocious. They're accusing anyone. If you speak up, as you know, on behalf of Palestine, they're going to accuse you of being anti-Semitic, come after you and investigate you. So now they're basically telling the people of Palestine, you can't talk about what has happened. You can't talk about it. And the United States straight up is a partner in this genocide with Israel. Straight up they are. They've done nothing to stop it. And they are providing weapons and everything to Israel. Straight up, they're doing that. And, this is just another way of how they seek to control us. And as you always talk about metaphysical imperialism, well, this is just another way of doing that. And they're going to accuse this, I think it was an assistant principal of whatever in Maplewood, accuse them of being anti-Semitic, but teaching the truth.
Thank you. Thank you, Sister Lisa. One of the things you need to do is you need to read the book called The Wall. It's about the extermination of the white people who happen to be Jewish in Poland and the methods they use. They call it the kettle. They take you out of your neighborhood, and then they force you into this area where there's overpopulation. So when they take you out of your neighborhood, that's a pseudonym for ethnic cleansing or gentrification. And just as the people who were white who happen to be Jewish are moved out of their neighborhood, and you see this very clearly in Schindler's List, the Nazis are moving into their apartments and moving into their homes. Well, Sister Lisa was also there when they were auctioning off land, the real estate that they had recently taken from the people who occupied Gaza from the river to the sea.
But that was in Teaneck. And on the 31st, they're having another one of those auctions in Teaneck, New Jersey.
They have them in Brooklyn and in Manhattan. So this is what colonialism is about. They exterminate you and they take your land. And when you don't have control over your school, when you cannot represent yourself in a political party, then you are a colony. You are in a colony. And colonialism is death. And the only answer to that is resistance. And so the reason Thursday night was so beautiful is people weren't just there to eat and laugh and commemorate over Ralph. He wouldn't have wanted that. He wouldn't want you to mourn. He wants you to get even, organized. And that's just what was happening. So I want to mention his godson, who unfortunately was the victim of the electric car. It needed charging, and he was in Midwest where there was no charge station, so he did not make it. But he sent his love. He sent us empanadas. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. And the person who was responsible for coordinating this wonderful feast is called Giacomo, good friend of Jimmy D's. And if you were there and you tasted those empanadas and you want more, Google nuchas.com. Nuchas, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, nuchas.com. That's where the empanadas came from. In addition to that, remember this name, Nick Swain, a Riverside Church caterer. The food was off the chart. And last but not least, our sisters of color, Just Soul, and Soul is S-U-L. They know how to, S-O-U-L, they know how to burn the pots and make you scream for your mama. That's how good their food was. I want to continue right now, and I want to acknowledge one of our warriors that's in the house. Your mic is open. Did you want to say a few words?
Excellent poem by Kazi to begin with, and then Professor Louis just set the mood. I was very sorry I was unable to attend the gathering on last Thursday on the 21st, by all accounts, it was just so good. I just want to say one point. I don't want to waste time, but Sister Ann was speaking about Rashid and his somewhat improved situation in captivity. And one of the things she was speaking about was the phone calls and emails that, you know, we political prisoners and the supporters ask people to make. And we should keep in mind just a small email, a little phone call, maybe 10, 20 minutes of your time. If enough of them arrive at the prison, you know, bureaucrats and the governors and wherever it's being sent to, phones and doorsteps, then, you know, action, positive action sometimes does happen. So take the time, take that 15 minutes, half an hour, send some of those emails, make some of those phone calls. Certainly for Comrade Leonard Peltier and Mumia Abu Jamal, but also for the other poor prisoners too. And let me leave it at that with what we always say, what's the call? Free them all.
Well, I thank you so much. I'm trying to get everything in tonight, but I never want to neglect a true warrior from the Republic of New Africa. Brother Saddam, your mic is open. Did you want to say anything or make an announcement?
Thank you, Mama Betty. I just want to say free the land, free Mumia, free Leonard, and as our dear Elder Robert Ralph Pointer told us and still continues to tell us, we're going to have to get a bigger plate. We have to continue to build this movement if we're going to be successful. So I want everybody to be conscious of that. Everybody, thank, be prepared to get a bigger plate. Free
thank
the land,
you,
free them all.
Thank you. A true son of Ralph Pointer's, a true son. I also want to announce that there were so many people of goodwill there that were touched by Ralph. One of them was Bishop Ajaye. He was a son and a Coptic minister of Queen Mother Moore. And he and Ralph used to sit at the feet of Queen Mother Moore together. I don't want to impose on him, but if he would like to say a few words, I will give him that opportunity. He opened up our journey into the program with a blessing. Brother Ajaye, your mic is open if you wanted to say a few words before we move on.
Yeah, Sister Betty?
Yes, dear, we hear you.
Yes. Let me tell you, Ralph is so proud of you. That program was just, it was just beyond. And the ancestors were there, Queen Mother Moore was there, Ralph was there in spirit, And just can't say enough about everyone that was there. It was just really tremendous. And, you know, just got to keep going forward together and backwards never.
Thank you. And I want to say to this group, one of the presenters who was absolutely astonishing, and every time she does a performance, I am amazed at her talent and her perception, and that is Kasise Siddiqui, who is constantly lifting up the name of her father, Kamal Siddiqui. I know Ann Lamb could probably write a book and tell you of the struggles of this warrior, but I want you to please pay attention on this station. We're going to start featuring him along with Comrade Mania and Peltier. Say that name, Kamal Siddiqui. And so without further ado, I'm going to try and bring a touch of what you missed. I hope the technology of our equipment will allow you to hear this. It was an amazing program. And just bear with me a minute. I am not a good techie.
Ralph Pointer, A Revolutionary Life. The English poet William Wordsworth once said, "The child is the father of the man." Rarely life of Ralph Pointer. Pointer, a member of the Black Panther Party and the Black Liberation Army, is perhaps best known, at least in recent days, as the man who fought hardest for the freedom of his imprisoned radical wife, lawyer Lynn Stewart. He stood alone in the sweltering Washington, D.C. summer sun for hours, with a sign in front of the White House demanding her freedom. But a reflection on his youth shows an unusual child. One of six children of the Pointer family in a small steel town in western Pennsylvania called Vandergrift, a few miles from Pittsburgh. His father, George Pointer, was a union organizer there, and little Ralph would actually accompany him when he was just 6 years old. At 12 years old, he took pleasure at playing in the snow, making snowballs and throwing them as far as he could. One day, another union organizer saw the boy throwing snowballs and said to Ralph, "You're pretty good with that snowball, aren't you?" Ralph replied, "Of course. I can hit anything I aim for, no matter how far." The union organizer asked him to climb a hill overlooking the steel mill and explain to the boy that the union was on strike against the mill and the guys being driven there were scabs or men trying to take union jobs. He then asked Ralph to pack his snowballs with big rocks. Ralph did so. When he asked Ralph if he could throw these rock snowballs at the trucks that stood in front of the mill and hit their front windows, you could almost guess young Ralph's response. "Of course." Ralph threw for most of the day and hit exactly what he aimed for. That night, the union organizer went to Ralph's home and told his father that Ralph was very instrumental to the union's success in striking against the mill. Pointer helped the union before he even became a teenager. When he went to the local elementary school's third grade, he learned what his older brothers had learned years before. That colored boys, well, that's what they called them back then, couldn't go to school without encountering violence, as there were so few colored people in the town. Ralph was beaten, and his new hat and jacket made by his mother got messed up. When he saw how sad his mother was at seeing his state, he resolved to end it the next time it occurred. The next day, when his attackers came at him, he didn't run. Instead, he stood his ground and fought back vigorously. Before long, his attackers began to flee. He learned a life lesson about self-defense that would, years later, inform his political. Now the words of Ralph Quinton, quote, "Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outdoors again," unquote. Ralph Poynter. Ralph Poynter, steel worker, elementary school teacher, investigator for his lawyer wife, union brother, revolutionary, returns to his ancestors after 89 winters in America. With love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
I want to thank all of you that were on tonight. I want to thank the entire community that helped me handle the long, dull pain and rise up. Atula Continua, Ralph Puente Presente. Thank all of you that were on the call tonight. Thank all of you that showed up. And let's keep the struggle going on. Let's answer this critter, this creature who thinks they can recolonize us and re-enslave us. Salute, everybody, and good night. And thank you. And Kazi, thank you for that beautiful poem.
Awesome.